as an introduction. One of the things we can learn on a retreat like this, longer one than usual for some of us, or in doing this practice over an extended period of time, whether daily practice or retreat practice, is that we can learn that our the ways in which we perceive, interpret the world, the attitudes that we have about things and ourselves, is partly state-specific. That at different states of mind, we'll see things differently, ourselves differently. And to see how it shifts and changes depending on the state of our mind, state of our meditation, is both revealing in and of itself, but also can help us become wise and fluid to go between different states and not be fooled by the particular interpretations that come from any particular state that we have. And the point of, I think the point of Buddhist practice is not to have any particular state, but to be fluid, free, to roam between states, to be easy and light, to not hold on to one way of being, but be able to, if they're healthy ways of being, to be able to go be fluid between them. So, for example, we might see the world very different if we have greed or if we have anger. We might see very different attitudes, ways of seeing things, understanding things. We might see the world differently if we're in distracted states compared to being undistracted, really present, aware. We might interpret and the world, ourselves, have different attitudes if we're agitated, restless, versus if we're stable, steady, confident. We might be a very different way of seeing the world if we have insight into how changeable it is, versus if we kind of assume that everything is fixed, this is the way it's going to be. We might be within the world and see it very differently if we're clinging, or if we are loosening up, loosening and loosening our clinging through things like disenchantment and dispassion fading away. So these teachings for this retreat, in some sense, are pointing out different states, kind of being, that we can have, that begin shifting our way of understanding ourselves, the world, our attitudes. And that these different sets of three that we've gone through this retreat can be seen both as a path of deepening the practice, but also just a kind of a pointing out that there are these different states we can move between, up and around, up and down, pop into, and different times for who knows what reason. And to be able to recognize them and to be able to navigate in them because, oh, I know this one. And not to hold on to any one of them as the right one or any one of them as being the wrong one. That, well, at least some of what we're talking about here, the stages going through of practice, they're all right in their own way, their own time. So when I was 17, I was traveling around for a summer with some friends in a car. And a few times on that trip, something happened to me that I didn't really understand, but this is remarkable. What just happened? And I was, in the back seat, kind of, and looking out the window and just looking at the scenery. And very much at ease and content, looking at this wonderful scenery as we went along. And then I didn't really recognize it when it happened, but I ended up somehow contentedly with all my faculties present, my eyes open, seeing what was there, but not seeing anything in certain way. I couldn't say that I was not seeing anything. I could say that. But I couldn't say I was seeing anything either. The world hadn't disappeared from my sight. But I also wasn't registering in some way. And I only became aware of it when I kind of woke up from it. And so, what was that? It felt so good. It felt so pure. It felt so clean. It felt so unself-conscious. And after coming out of it, I felt different. I felt kind of clean or clear or something. So what was that? But I was like, wow, that was pretty cool. Over time, especially as I started meditating, I started to recognize that one of the features of that car ride experience was trusting. A trusting that was not intended. A trusting that was self-conscious. A perception, a perceiving in a certain way that was unself-conscious, like self-consciousness disappeared. Being self-conscious, I was so self-conscious when I was young. And that somehow being self-conscious vanished. What replaced it? Maybe nothing. It just wasn't there in the field of perception. And there was a calm, peacefulness, and there was a trust, a deep trust. And so these qualities of being unself-conscious, inner perceiving of the world, perceiving of practice, being calm, settled, and trusting in some deep way. Maybe not trusting anything, but the kind of trust that comes from having put down all mistrust. So if there's no more mistrust, what's left? Maybe it's better than trust, but I call it trust. And so this can happen in a practice as we go along here, something like this. And one of the things that we can learn to do is to rest in this kind of way of being. Rest in the trust, in a sense, or rest in this unself-conscious way of being. And in this way of talking, as at some point in practice, there are three beds we can rest in. Three beds we can just kind of lean back and settle back and just rely on the beds to hold us up. In the Buddhist language, he called it dwelling or abiding. I'm calling it beds. Three beds for abiding. And they have kind of, you know, a little bit cryptic words, each of them, but I'll go through them with you. In English, they're usually called the signless, the wishless, and emptiness. And these are three beds to trust. Just lay back and let them receive you. So the first one is the signless. And that's how it's usually translated. I'll offer something else later. But the signless is a translation of the word animitta. Some of you know the word nimitta as being, it's most common, I think, meditation circles, people know about it, is when it's used for a kind of a projection of the mind. It's often as a little light or disc or something at the tip of the nose. It's done in some concentration practices. And sometimes that's what people say in nimitta. That's all they mean. They think that's what the word means only. But the word has, nimitta has, you know, other meanings. And for the people who spoke Pali, there wasn't so specialized meaning. And one of the meanings is, one of the ways it's understood, it's part of what it means is the mind's projections. The mind projects things onto the world, ideas onto the world. And the common ones that's emphasized is it projects permanence on what is changing. It projects happiness on things which are actually not that happy. And it projects self where there is no self. And so it's clearly the mind has this disposition, this orientation to lock in to some ideas that this is the way things are. They're not going to change. I had a glorious summer once when I was 18. I think I was like 19 or something like that. And I came to the conclusion at the end of the summer, I will never, so that's the delusion of permanence, right? I will never be depressed again. And that lasted only a few weeks because that fall I was the most depressed I've ever been in my life. So this delusion of permanence, this is how it is. It's always going to be this way. So we live in these projections. And sometimes people live their whole lives in them. And that's kind of, projections are then nimittas. The other thing that nimitta means is it means kind of like the attribute of something. It's characteristics. But what's wonderful about calling it attributes is that the English word attribute has two pronunciations. Attribute and attribute. An attribute is what we attribute. And so again, it's the mind's role in focusing on something and picking out of the range of things it could pick out of some particular attribute that it latches onto. So, for example, I might come up here, look at all the shoes in the shoe rack downstairs, and see some shoes that are just like brand new, shining and new. And I find myself, you know, just kind of obsessing, coming up here, meditating, obsessing about those shoes, and like, those shoes, they'll do it for me if I could just have those shoes. But the reason I'm obsessing about it is because those are new shoes. It's the newness of them. That's the attribute that I got caught by. In fact, there's the same shoes next to them that are all worn out, and they're gotten real soft, probably comfortable to wear. But, oh, no, I'm fixated on the new. That's the attribute I picked up. Or it could be a color. Or it could be, you know, anything. Some of you might have shoes that are decked out in 14-karat gold and diamonds. And it's like, that's what I want. That's the attribute that I get fixated on. So, you know, shoes are kind of one thing, but we do that with people. There's some attribute of them that's the thing we zero in on. And so we hate them or we love them or something. And so this kind of attributing or focusing on an attribute and fixating on it, grabbing on, craving, clinging. We often don't cling to the thing, but some aspect of the thing, what it means for us, the promise it has, some attribute. And this idea that nimitta has this meaning becomes prominent in this practice called guarding the sense doors. And often when people hear this teachings, and even sometimes the way it's taught, that sometimes is a wise way and sometimes not so wise, is it's averting your senses from the world. Like, keep your eyes down, guard your sense doors, don't look at anything. Certainly don't look at the shoes. So guarding the sense doors, you know, so don't look at billboards because that gets you going into wanting something. So that can be wise to avoid, but that's not what the Buddha had in mind. What the Buddha was talking about is protecting the sense doors by not grasping at the attributes of things, the nimitta of things. So it means staying mindful and present enough. You don't have to avert your gaze from anything, but it's a different kind of staying very present to have seeing happen, but the seeing does not zero in and lock into something to grab onto it. It doesn't cling. It's protecting ourselves from clinging. It's not protecting ourselves from the world. And that's, again, what I'll highlight, that's something I've been saying a few times now, that the Buddha wasn't making the world a problem. The problem to address is our relationship to the world, the clinging that we have. And so this attention to this, how we cling to these attributes, this is what's going to do it for me. And things lock on, lock in. And so a very interesting study of this phenomena from some of us has to do with how we see with our eyes. Our eyes can be very relaxed and soft and cool and just float in the eye sockets, looking at the world, that the eyes just kind of roam and move, and maybe the neck moves around a little bit, and as we look and, you know, we see things. And if we look at some particular thing, then we kind of, the eyes still kind of roam that particular thing and moves around. Maybe you've seen photographs or studies or whatever of a photograph, and I guess they track how a person's eyes roams around the photograph, and they have lines they show where the eyes have gone. And you see, you know, it wanders this way and that, and up and down and around, and this idea of letting the eyes roam freely and wander around and not get fixated on anything is sometimes used in therapy. People have panic attacks, sometimes are told, or people who have kind of a freeze state are sometimes told to kind of look around the room, look out the window, look at things as they go by. Because it's when the eyes are protected from getting fixated on something, it's harder for the mind to get fixated. It has a way sometimes of loosening the fixations of the mind where it's stuck maybe. And I'm not going to ask you to do it, but sometimes, you know, I ask people to look at a spot in front of them, and then just a little spot, and just kind of fixate on it. And don't let your eyes waver from that spot. Just don't move it at all. It's right there. And very quickly, it starts feeling stressful to hold it. What's less stressful is to let the eyes kind of roam and wander and float around. And so this idea that the eyes can see, sometimes even better, by being not fixated, locked in to the attribute that we are preoccupied with. And sometimes the attribute is not then the world that we see, but rather what the mind inside is fixated on, our fear. Fear is a great cause for some people to get locked their eyes. Sometimes desire. People see people's eyes lock in and zero in, and they kind of lose their relaxed, floating in the eye socket kind of way of being. So the nimitta is the attribute. Guarding the sense doors is protecting ourselves from getting caught or locked in to the attributes of the senses. And animita, called the signless or the attributeless, is a way of perceiving, being aware, that is not locked in, not caught by, not attached to, not fixated on any attribute, on any particular thing. And so the quality of the attention is one that is free, free of attribution, free of, and so the mind, the awareness is not taking anything in a fixed way. And to do that, takes a lot of trust. It takes a lot of trust that it's okay to relax so much, to kind of lower our guard, that the eyes don't have to be fixated. Trust that we don't have to make something happen, attain something. And we also kind of lock in with the desire. This is what I want. This is the thing. So we're fixating on some attribute, some idea. Or enough trust to put down our hate or aversion. It takes a lot of trust to let our senses be open, but not being driven or hijacked or held hostage by some of these strong dispositions of the mind. So seeing without grasping, hearing without grasping, tasting without grasping, smelling without grasping, sensing in the body without grasping, knowing what's happening in the mind without grasping. And then something like that was happened when I was driving around backseat when I was 17. I was clearly aware, but I wasn't grasping anything. I also wasn't daydreaming. It was very clear that I wasn't like daydreaming and lost in thought. And so this experience, what we've been talking about the last few days about disenchantment, fading away, dispassion, and then cessation, is moving in the direction of trust, trusting, not being fixated on something, of non-grasping, non-clinging. And that can be done in all kinds of different ways. That can be done very intensely. It can be done in more ordinary kind of ways of happening in ordinary life. But I'd like to offer you one exercise. So you might try some of these if they support you and you're trusting being still and calm and settled and undistracted. One is to just sit and let your eyes just gently, calmly float around and look at trees or anything. The other thing is to get a sense and feel for what it's like to look at the world through your peripheral vision. The central vision is sometimes, I think, in people who do study eyes, talk about the focus of fixation. It's where we can kind of zero in and really focus on something and see something. But the peripheral vision doesn't do that. It just receives the data coming in without fixating on anything. And so to kind of see that difference, the peripheral vision is kind of get a sense, I'm certainly aware and present and seeing in a certain way, but I'm not interfering, I'm not focusing on it, I'm not concerned with these things particularly. It's a very different way of being. There's more ease, perhaps, or less attachment, less complexity in the peripheral vision. In a certain kind of way, that can be done also with awareness, any attention. That maybe there's something equivalent to peripheral vision, though it might not be peripheral. You know, and structurally or something, but there are ways of perceiving that do not involve any fixation. The way of sensing without fixation. And to trust that, to think of that as the bed to lay down in. And the quality of that bed, if you want high quality beds to lay down in, have a lot to do with having gone through something like this process of settling that we've described here in this retreat. Becoming able to be here in the present, stable, calm. To have insight, to become disenchanted with grasping. And then discovering something about some some feeling, starting to have some feeling for not clinging, awareness that doesn't grasp. And if that whole process has some momentum in it, or is kind of well established, then that bed is really good and soft. Will receive you very nicely. You might even be so good that you really forget about yourself. You're not needed anymore. Isn't that kind of cool? Finally, you're not needed. It's kind of like in a really good nap. You wake up from a nap and you're not needed. It's just so nice. The light is nice in the room and you're rested and clear and content. Nothing needs to be done for a few minutes. And you're not needed. What a relief. While being happy and contented and rested. So this resting in this bed, leaning back and trusting, non-clinging. The danger in this talk, all these talks are phenomenally dangerous. If you take it, some attribute of it, and lock in and hold on, it's just, that's the thing. Or that's not the thing. You know, it's whatever. So, but if you, you know, if you practice in a non-grasping way, you might experiment and recognize a little bit the times where you have a sense that you're present, where being self-conscious has been reduced, where there's a kind of just a willingness and openness to just let things be known without fixation, without grasping at anything. Where maybe the sense of awareness, knowing, sensing, seeing, whatever it might be, has a feeling of kind of flow or floating or moving gently. And even if it gets very reduced and limited, so to, you know, not roaming the whole universe, but maybe just roaming around gently in a little feeling of pressure in the torso where you're breathing. And it's maybe only like a square inch or less. But even there, that's actually a huge playground for awareness. If you just let it then float and roam around that little square inch, but don't fixate, but kind of settle in, rest, and gently hang in there. Some of you know that the word vichara, vitaka, is like placing your attention someplace. And sometimes the vichara is sometimes likened to it's like cleaning a brass bowl. And you take a cloth and you put it in the bowl. That's the initial application of attention. And then you kind of rub it. You don't just hold your cloth there and expect the bowl to get clean. And so this gentle movement and staying there, being with it, and not moving it willfully, but allowing the natural ease and flow of perception to kind of gently move in that place where you have directed your attention. One of the nice things about the signless is that it has no attributes. So you can't really cling to it. You can cling to your idea of it. So it's introducing into the practice here something whose very nature kind of shows us a way of being alive and present and equal without fixing on anything, grabbing anything. Just here, present, aware, with awareness set free. So I began with the introduction about how our way of seeing and interpreting the world is state-specific. So I'd like to review a little bit the steps that we've taken here in these talks. Maybe it's helpful to kind of see the flow from a different point of view. And maybe you can helps you see maybe you're at different places at different days or times. And knowing that it's just a place to be for a time, you're very relaxed about it. That's just how it is now. Things will change. So we began with knowing, sensing, and relaxing, which is practicing those is a way of overcoming distraction, the distracted mind. It's a way of getting rooted here and now. Clear distinct acts of knowing and sensing and relaxing are connecting, are grounding, here I am, this is what's going on. And the mind can still be restless and agitated, but as we do this knowing, sensing, relaxing, there's a stabilizing, a well-being, a confidence that gives a little bit more strength and power, strength and continuity to the awareness practices. So at some point we have insight, we start seeing, breaking through the projections of permanence and self, and start seeing insight into the changeable nature of things, and seeing some deep way of seeing the ouch, ouches and ours, and seeing not self. That decreases the projections, decreases the agitations of these projections, the fragility that they create. And as we kind of, these insights then can lead to disenchantment, dispassion, fading away, cravings, and cessation of them. A process which reduces the clinging and the craving, reduces the allure and the promise that craving comes with. And then with the cessation, there comes a time when we start having some inkling, some sense of what it's like to be present and aware without clinging, without craving. And it might be that it's mixed. It might be that we have some sense of that while we're clinging to other things. There's not all or nothing. But that sense of the signless, of that ability to perceive without having an attribute that we fixate on, it can be very helpful to begin kind of dissolving, or dissolve. I like the word dissolving, the places where we still cling. Trusting, non-clinging. So each of these kind of steps that described here come with different views, different ways of understanding, different perceptions, different ways of being, each appropriate for itself, and to some degree we move between them. Sometimes we have to go right to the, start at the beginning, which is completely fine. We have to make one of the things of this practice, we're getting familiar with how all this works, familiar with our attention, how attention works, and how we perceive, and how we cling, and in all kinds of different situations. So whether you're at the beginning or the end, just that's the place where the learning is. We need to learn it all. Because in a sense, there is no map. It's up to you to learn the terrain and how it is for you in your mind and heart. So thank you. And that's the end of the talk. And I'm sitting here feeling very content with the idea that I can walk out of here and leave all attributes, signs, and evidence of this talk behind. I don't have to take it with me.